Hey, hey, you're listening to Spiritual Perspectives. When you hear that music, you know you're listening to Spiritual Perspectives. A quick interview and an opportunity to look at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. My name is Scout Bartlett. I'll be your host. We're coming to you from our flagship station, KEST, out of San Francisco, 1450 AM, simulcast at the same time around the world on www.ifidknownthen.com, www.ifidknownthen.com. And we'll archive the program there as well so that you get a chance to listen to it again. Our guest this morning, a very special individual, started out in university days, a dancer, and yet sort of coming apart, had found out that she had an of choice, was finding herself addicted to drugs, withdrawing, practically failing college, marriage was bad, family was definitely alienated, and just really the wheels were coming off of this trolley and was looking at a point in life where she'd hit bottom and it seemed like out was the only way out. Turned out the director of a ballet company that she belonged to saw her distress and just simply offered her the book Science and Health with Keys to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. As she read the book, she noticed that everything in her life gradually changed. The drugs dropped away, the marriage finally separated out into a healthy divorce. She regained some mental health, went back and not only finished a BA, but finished a master's degree and actually stayed on faculty there for a while. She was so grateful for what she'd found from this information from Mary Baker Eddy, the foundation of Christian Science, that she actually went to work for the Master Church, the Mother Church, and stayed there for quite some time. Has remarried, moved out of the Boston area, back out onto the West Coast, but has moved into a full-time professional as a practitioner, spent a period as a lecturer, and what we're speaking to is someone who is a full-time spiritual healer. So everybody, I'd like you to meet Deborah Hips. Deborah, this is everybody.
Thank you very much, Scout. Hello, Scout, and hello, everybody.
It's always good for me to introduce people so that sometimes folks don't realize the difference perhaps between people who have devoted their whole life and their whole life's work to a spiritual practice, to a healing practice, versus people who have a whole lot of other things they do and they just sort of dabble in it. There's a real place of having to reach a point of belief and an experience that would support that belief to get to where you can go and step into that full time. So, not to touch too heavily, but when you were in college, Deborah, and everything was coming apart, how bad was it, and how did you watch those changes come about?
Well, it was pretty bad. I was addicted to drugs. I was taking speed, amphetamines, and I was taking sleeping pills to counteract that. And one night, I just couldn't get enough sleeping pills, and I was awake all night, and it was clear to me that I had a choice. I could either go on to harder drugs or I could commit suicide. And I was actually living in San Francisco at that time. And I think there were 469 people who had gone off the Golden Gate Bridge, and I was going to be 470.
Oh, nice round number.
And so that day, honestly, I was on the way to the bridge, and something just said, some little angel thought, just said to me, why don't you go to the ballet studio and say goodbye to your friends? So I went to the ballet studio, but nobody was there except this director that you had mentioned before. And this is a woman who felt God was really important to her and that she practiced God's love throughout everything that she did, and it was very compelling. And over the course of the next few months after I started reading this book, Science and Health, that you mentioned, she just loved me. And I would go in and talk to her, and I'd ask her questions, and I'd pour out my troubles, and I'd walk out of there just feeling better. And at that time, I didn't really know what it was. But now, looking back on it, I can tell that it was God's love. And I think, Scout, what got me moving toward a spiritual practice was the knowledge that if this could help me, if God's love could help me, it could help everyone. And I wanted to be part of that.
You know, it's an interesting thing to get to see that when we're stuck in our, what I'll refer to as our conscious mind, there's a real place where it seems like we would have to find a conscious solution to whatever conscious issue we had going on. And yet I watch again and again and again that when we get more of, we could use the word energy, we could use the word spirit, or we can be more direct and say God's love. When we get more and more of that flowing in us, all of a sudden the other options show up and become apparent rather than being invisible. So it doesn't sound to me like what you did was read in the book Science and Health and then make decisions of I'm not going to do this or I am going to do that. I mean, you describe it that the drugs felt dropped away.
Right. That's right. That's right. I think I would call it a shift, a basic shift of consciousness. It went from a kind of a spiritually barren, gaunt, want kind of place, spiritually starved place, to slowly becoming enriched with a sense of the wonder of God and God's universe. And it was gradual. It took several months for this shift to take place. And spiritual growth takes place continually. I'm still growing spiritually and just loving that fact. But I think once we begin to accept the possibility of something greater than ourselves, a power greater than ourselves in our lives, that's when we can see change start.
Mm-hmm. So you're now a practitioner in Christian Science. So you work as a practitioner in Christian Science.
Right.
In that role, it sort of sounds funny, but the word science always refers to being able to replicate a result. So what kind of results have you watched be replicated around you, Deborah, as you've carried this and brought this level of healing to others?
Well, the word science is, it's a pretty descriptive word, because I've found that when I apply prayer consistently, then I see results that are also consistent. And I've seen this throughout my life. I've been in the practice for decades. And honestly, when it's done correctly and consistently, it's allowing for the divine to move in and take charge. It's allowing for God to be present. And once we do that, that's when things break loose. That's when healing happens.
So here's an interesting direction, just for fun. Certainly the Beatles said all there is love. There's certainly the phrase out there that says God is love. Deborah, let's just go after the key word there. How would you define the word love?
Well, love is something that you have to experience in the heart. It's not a head trip. And to me, love means there is a presence that is a caring, tender, loving experience there for everybody. I liken it to, I can tell you, Scout, well, it feels wonderful to sit in the sun on a cold day. You can feel that sun on your back, and it's comforting, and it warms you, and it spreads throughout your body, and it really feels good. I can tell you about it, but in order for you to really know it, you have to experience it. And I think that's the way it is with love, that it's something that you feel way down deep inside. It's a connection to the universe. It's good. It's solid. It's inspiring. It's beautiful. It's just the ultimate feeling.
Move to the next word then, worthy. Do we have to do something? Do we have to be good enough? Is love like Santa Claus? If I'm not good, I don't get to have that?
Oh, my gosh, that's such a good question. I always believed that I had been left out of love, that when I was born, God was kind of dealing out love, gifts of love and intelligence, and I was the end of the line, and so I got missed out on the love because I had a very unloving childhood. And so I thought, I didn't even know what it was. And I began to feel that sense of love, and the coolest thing, the most wonderful thing about it, is that it does not have to be earned. It's a gift of grace. And we're loved because we be. We love because we exist. We love because we are God's creation. It's not to be earned. And that's an incredible thing with incredible implications. Because we are loved the way we are worthy. We don't then have to go out into the world and earn the top dollar and drive the BMW and have the big house to prove to anybody that we're worthy. It's a gift that comes to our hearts as we open our thought to the presence of the divine.
Well, that raises an interesting question. If we open our heart to the presence of the divine, to love, does that rule out the BMW or the nice home?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. No, but the BMW and the nice home don't become our goals.
Bingo.
What becomes our goal is to experience more of the divine in our everyday affairs.
So you mentioned that this director of the ballet company, when you were a mess, sorry, blunt term.
It was okay, I was.
Yeah.
Pretty accurate.
You were at rock bottom. And you say she gave you the book Science and Health. She also obviously spoke with you, counseled with you, gave you a place to speak.
Yes.
But one piece, particularly for men, there's that tricky thing of anything, of anybody knowing anything we don't know, because we don't read the directions. So it's tricky to fathom that, well, I'll just read a book and that'll change things. But this is not the same as I'll just read a book and that'll change things. Talk a little bit about the experience of being introduced to Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, with being introduced to that and then watching changes come from that. I'm sure you've had your own experience, but you have to have seen that experience with others, even if they'd been practicing in Christian Science earlier.
Yes, well, as I said, I was on my way to the Golden Gate Bridge, and something odd happened. I stopped off at the ballet studio. Well, she invited me in and into her office and sat there and listened to all of my woes, and then she opened her desk drawer and took out this book and pushed it across the desk at me, to me, towards me, and she said, I said, what is that? And she said, well, it's religion. It's spirituality. It's a way of getting help. And I said, I don't need religion. I need help. She said, no, you didn't understand. This is a way of getting help. So I took the book, and I walked out of her door, and I walked downstairs. It was on Market Street. Walked into a bar, slammed the book up on the bar, and I said, now what do I do? I was practically an atheist, agnostic, on the verge of atheism at that point. Mm-hmm. And I just thought God didn't exist. There was too much awful stuff that was going on in the universe, and there couldn't be a God. So I thought, what am I going to do? Well, I took the book, and I said, well, because I think religion is a crutch, I'll show this woman that it's a crutch and that there's nothing to it. But in order to do that, I had to read the book.
Ah, good for you.
Well, what else could I do? I didn't
really know anything about
Christian Science.
Well, yeah, it's not just, I know it's wrong, I won't do it. It's like, I'll show her, but in order to show her, I have to be legitimate about it.
Yes, so I started to read the book. And at first, frankly, it didn't make any sense to me. I didn't understand it. But I would go in, and I would devise these questions that were fairly contrary. I was a bit resistant, to say the least. And I would go in, and I was smoking in those days, and I would blow smoke in her face, smoke right in her face, which was rude. But I was a rude child. I was a rude kid. And I would just spit out the question, and she just sat there, and frankly, Scout, she just loved the hell out of me. It was the most amazing thing. And I'd walk out of there every time. She answered my questions to my satisfaction. And as I continued to read the book, I was healed. I mean, I had a physical healing that really startled me. Would you like to hear it?
Yes, please.
All right. I was living in an apartment building in San Francisco, and I went downstairs to take care of my laundry. And the stairwell was brick, and I was in a hurry, and I scraped my hands on the brick wall. And I stood on the stairs. I remember it so clearly. And I looked at my knuckles, and my knuckles were bleeding. And I stood there, and I said, okay, what are you going to do? Well, go up and wash it off and put some Mercure Chrome on it and get on with it. And that this little voice said, yeah, but what if you were a Christian Scientist? What would you do? And the other side of me said, well, you're not a Christian Scientist, so go up and take care of this. And this little voice wouldn't let me go. And this little voice said, yeah, but what if you were a Christian Scientist? How would you deal? Said, okay, if I was a Christian Scientist, I would think that and understand the fact that God really is all power, all presence. And all is pretty unequivocal. All means all. It isn't all except for scraped knuckles. I mean, that's all. And that God is good. And so there couldn't be anything like an injury in God's universe. And I looked at my hand, and it was totally healed. And it was almost scary, because that was the first time in my whole life that I actually felt that there was a power outside of myself. And at that moment, I discerned that it was a good power, and I wanted to know more about it. And that's kind of when the change took place. I sort of went over the hurdle onto the other side and said, okay, I'm going to pay more attention to this. I'm going to look a little more deeply into it.
Yeah, that's enough to mess with your head.
It did. It did. I mean, I was really, literally scared.
Uh-huh.
It was a shock to me. But sometimes we need to be hit over the head.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
And I definitely did.
So, Deborah, when you watch that sort of transformation, I'm looking for the action verb, as it were. Would you say that's a push myself into it, grab myself into it, will myself into it, release myself into it, let go and fall into it? What's that experience when it makes that switch? I'm referring to that you felt, you looked at it, you looked at your injured hand, you looked at your injured hand, you said there couldn't be anything like an injury in God's universe because God is loving, so this has to be a confusion on my own part, I gather. Is that a fall into it, a release into it, a will myself into it, a discipline myself into it? What's that shift?
I think I let Spirit take hold of me instead of my trying to take hold of Spirit.
And say that again.
Okay. Rather than trying to push myself into it, trying to get it, trying so hard to understand it, I just said, okay, God, here I am. Take hold of me. It's kind of inviting the Spirit into one's being. And I have an expression, Scout, it's called opening my kimono. And I'll often just feel like I'm opening my kimono and just saying, okay, God, come into my heart. Come into my very core and transform me, shape me, mold me to thy image, to what you want for me.
I let Spirit take hold of it rather than push Spirit to take hold of it.
Yeah,
well,
pretty,
I can feel that
hard,
as I think about it. I hope everybody can.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Sorry, I said I can feel that as I think about it. I hope everybody can.
It's an amazing thing. It is a kind of a yielding. It is a kind of surrender, but it's also an opening. And it's a little bit like floating in the ocean. I grew up by the ocean in Laguna Beach, and I swam a lot. And in order to float, you have to let go. You have to relax. If you don't relax, you can't float. And so, in a way, you invite the Spirit to come into your heart, and then you just let go and trust. And that's the hardest part, is letting go and trusting. But it's also the most satisfying, because you don't know where it's going to take you. And it takes you into some amazing places.
So I'm looking at a little bit of information about you, Deborah. And are you at this time, is being a practitioner, which translated for other people, being someone to whom people come when they're seeking, well, when they're seeking to actually let Spirit take hold or heal, is that your full-time gig?
Yes, that's all I do.
How much of a letting go was that?
It happened gradually. Somebody said to me, why don't you think about doing this? And I thought, oh, I'm not good enough at that. I'm not spiritual enough. I'm not ready for that. And she said, just open your thought to it. So I said, okay, I could do that. And so I was teaching at the University of Oregon at that time, and I took Tuesday nights for God. And I'd spent Tuesday nights just praying and reading the Bible, reading Science and Health, and just opening my thought. And then I had somebody call me for help, and it was a student who had a problem, and it was a really interesting thing. She said, I've been throwing up for 3 days, and I need help. And I said, well, why are you calling me? Why don't you call somebody who is really good at this, who's experienced at this? And she said, because I don't know anybody else. You're the only one I know. And so I remember going into my office at the university that I shared with five other people, And I put my hands in my ears, and I opened up a French book in front of me just to look like I was doing something important, I guess. And I said, okay, God, you got to help me out here, because I don't know what to do. And so I just listened. I opened up my thought, and I said, God, what do I need to know? And the thought came really strongly. There's some hatred going on here. There's a problem here with her. I didn't know it was that time it was her marriage, but there's some hatred here. There's some resentment here. And I thought, that's really odd. She's throwing up. God, come on, give me something a little bit more relevant. And it came again. And so I said, okay, if God is love, or since, even better, since God is love, there, that love will permeate all places where there could be resentment or hatred. And then I had to get going and get up and go teach a class. And I saw her later on in the afternoon, and I said, well, how are you feeling? She said, oh, yeah, that's right, I asked you to pray for me. She said, well, I had a Big Mac and a milkshake for lunch. And she said, but the best thing is that I hadn't spoken to my husband for 3 days, and we worked everything out, and we're all happy and good together. And that was the first time I had really seen this work with somebody else's life. That was pretty thrilling.
So there's an interesting piece that catches my attention here. This was not you counseling with her, but it was you effectively being a link to that love which is God. You effectively being a link to that love which is God and calling that through for her.
It's kind of like plugging in or turning the lights on. The electricity is there. You just have to turn the lights on or plug in, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the way it is with this universe of spirit, that we align our thought with it. And once we've done that, Scout, we can see everything in a spiritual light, and that heals. That's effective in healing.
Mm-hmm. So I'm picturing this almost like spiritual jumper cables.
Okay.
Jumper cables, I grew up where they have winter. And so in winter, one has jumper cables so that the car that has plenty of energy can jump energy into the car that doesn't have enough energy so that it can start and then it can run on its own energy.
I think that's pretty close. It's also getting a spiritual view of what's going on. And when you get a spiritual view and you see what God sees, it's trying to see it from that spiritual perspective of God's universe. What does God's universe look like right here? What does it feel like? How does it appear? And when we get to that place in prayer, then that's what we actually see. And it looks like there's a big change, but it's really, there is a big change, but it's a change of perspective, which then results in a change of experience. And I don't know if I said that clearly enough at all.
Mm-hmm. A change in perspective that results in a change of experience. So one could kind of say, in the example of this girl, that her healthy body and resolving whatever it was that was their standoff in their relationship always existed. She just wasn't in that place.
Perfect.
As if it were a place.
Perfect. That's exactly right.
So prayer is a key word for me. Every time we do the word spiritual perspectives, I like to explore, every time we do the show, spiritual perspectives, I like to explore that word, not from an official definition, but from what's the experience. So, Deborah, how would you define the experience of prayer, and particularly, how would you define how you notice, recognize when you're fully in it?
Prayer for me is aligning my thought, my conscious awareness, with the divine perspective. And the way I do it, it changes. There are lots of ways of doing it. But the way that I'm doing it mostly now is there are two things. One is the prayer of gratitude. I find that I can be so grateful for God and for what God has done and what God does do in everyone's lives, that that sense of universal love that permeates, that penetrates. And I'm just filled with gratitude for that. And that's a prayer. And I find that's an effective prayer. I remember one time, would you like an example of how that worked exactly?
I'd love
me?
That.
Okay. I wear glasses. Yes, I'm working to be healed of that need, and I'll get there, but I'm not there yet. And I wear glasses, and I had to have my prescription changed. So I went to the nearby mall where they have their optometry shop with glasses and exams, and I had an exam, and they kept putting different pieces of glass in front. Before I went, I was seen double. I should have said that. Before I went to have the prescription change, I was seen double, and I wasn't seen very clearly. And so I went in, and they kept putting the glass in front until I saw the clearest that they could get it for me. And I still saw double. Mm. And I knew that, and I had a week or so before I could pick up my new glasses. I didn't tell them that, but I walked out of there and thought, this isn't going to work. And I, again, what I do is I just ask God. I reach out and ask God to tell me what I need to know. And so what came to me then was that I could be grateful that God was giving me vision and that God was giving me correct vision and clear vision. And so for that whole week before I picked up my new glasses, I said, thank you, Father. Thank you for giving me vision. Thank you for giving me eyes. Thank you for the gift of sight. And I know because you gave it to me, it's good. And so I went in and picked up my glasses, and I saw perfectly, singly.
Nice. All right, so you said there were two kinds of prayer that you like to refer to. Prayer of gratitude, and what's
that's
the second
one?
And
if I could just link that to the Bible,
yes,
for a second. Jesus raised Lazarus from the grave. That was a pretty impressive thing he did. And Lazarus was in the grave for 4 days. And when Jesus got there, I think the Bible said that he stank. It was pretty, you know, he was gone. And so Jesus came to the grave, and his first prayer was one of gratitude. He said something like, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me, and I know that thou hearest me always. And then he called Lazarus forth, and Lazarus came forth. And then he also, before he multiplied the loaves and the fishes, he gave thanks. And so to me, that's a real key. Okay, so to get to the other kind of prayer that I use most often right now, it's the prayer of petition. It's a prayer of petition, not for things. I don't need a bigger car. I don't need more money in the bank. I wouldn't mind, but it's not what I pray for.
So it's got some convenience to it.
Yes, it does, definitely. So what I pray for is just for God to show me, to guide me, what do I need to know? And I find putting questions out there, just putting them out to the universe, they get answered, Scout. And those, and that's a prayer to me. That's opening my thought to what is it, God? What is it, Father, Mother, God? In Christian Science, we love the term Father and Mother for God because it gives a sense of the fullness, the wholeness of God's being. And so my prayer is, Father, Mother, God, what do I need to know here? Show me what I need. Tell me what I need to know. And that prayer gets answered. It always gets answered. Sometimes the answer comes right away. Sometimes the answer comes later. But it always comes.
Father, Mother, what do I need to know here? Show me what I need to know. So I'm hearing a lot of basis here, Deborah, in a change of perspective, just to repeat the word, stepping out of how I've been seeing it to know it in a different way.
Right. It's a little bit like taking off in an airplane. I've often thought, I used to travel a lot for my job, and I would think when the plane goes up that as the town or the airport gets smaller as you go away from it, you see more clearly that there's a pattern often to the streets of the town. And you don't see it when you're down in the middle of it, but you see it when you go up. You see more clearly the landscape. And that's what I think prayer does for me. It takes me out of my limited little sense of things and helps me see from a more infinite perspective. And that's the perspective that heals.
Seeing from a more infinite perspective, and that's the perspective that heals. I like that a lot. I want to, excuse me, just take a second for our listeners here. This morning's program is sponsored by the First Church of Christ Scientists, Mill Valley. And what I like to mention to folks is if you find the thought that we're discussing here to be interesting, the First Church of Mill Valley invites you to join them or any other church of Christian Science in order to explore those thoughts further. And one piece that everybody I talk to in Christian Science sort of reminds me to say is it's not a place where they're going to then try to rope you in and demand that you believe what they believe. That's not how those organizations, even though they're called churches, it's not how they work. So if you've had that experience in something else called a church, you may not want to cross-apply that experience as being here. You can even just go into their reading rooms and check stuff out. So words are a really key piece here. I noticed that you write a lot, Deborah.
I write a lot, do I?
Yeah, well, you're published quite a bit anyway. We'll put it that way. I noticed that you're published frequently. One that really caught my attention was just the title that said, Abandoning Apathy. But I noticed in a funny way you also abandon your agnostic stance. And abandoning would be letting go of these other perspectives would be another direction to go for that. So when you find people who seem like they're completely lost, if you were to encounter somebody who was in the state you were in when you were in school and getting ready to take yourself off the planet, when you find someone who's completely lost and stuck in a place of apathy or beyond, what do you see changes when they come back to being able to have that flow of aliveness in them that we call love?
I think hope is a very important thing, to just admit that there might be something better. That hope kind of greases the skids, so to speak. Hope opens doors that might otherwise be closed. And somehow when that director of the ballet company gave me that book, somehow or other, I think her conviction gave me hope. And that kind of started me on the path. And also, I think when you talk about abandoning the things that aren't so wonderful in our lives, I love to think about it like this. If I am in L.A. and going towards San Francisco, the closer I get to San Francisco, the further behind I leave L.A. And I think that happens in our spiritual journey, that as we go forward spiritually, as we seek to express more of the divine in our lives, we automatically at the same time leave the old behind because we're moving forward.
Mm-hmm. I know I had a period in my own life when I pretty much bottomed out, and it was interesting because at the time it seemed as if the whole world was a dark and separate place. Not that I would have languaged it specifically that way, but it seemed like the whole world was uninviting or unhelpful or untenable. And yet I can remember a piece that opened the door for me to come back out of that was literally me finding any small piece of me that I could either trust in or depend on or even have control of. And as I shifted, then I got to see that more and more it was about from where I was viewing the world and less about from where the world was or even from where the world was viewing me, for that matter.
I had a great experience walking the streets of San Francisco when I lived there. I was going to Cal Berkeley and dancing, but I lived in the city. And I didn't have money for a bus fare. And I was walking the streets, and you know how cold it gets, and sometimes it's gray. And I just, all I could see was the dirt in the gutter, the newspapers being blown around, and all the trash. And I was just feeling so depressed, and it was so dark, and I just had no money, and it was really tough. Something said to me, this little voice that I keep talking about, and I'll explain that in a minute, but something said to me, look up. And I looked up, and the houses in San Francisco, of course, as everyone in the Bay Area knows, are right along the sidewalk. The fronts are right next to the sidewalk. And I looked up, and I saw this gorgeous geranium, neon orange geranium that filled the whole window. It was a huge bay window, and it almost had light of its own. It was just radiant with color and vibrancy. And it was such a good lesson, very simple, but a really good lesson to me. If you look down, you're not going to see too much that's good. You got to look up. It's just kind of like you were looking for you.
Mm-hmm.
We have to look for it. It's not going to just come and hit us over the head until we start to think, I got to open a door. I've got to go a different direction. I need to think differently. I need to find something to hope for. I need to find something beautiful. That geranium is a common flower, common plant, but it spoke to me of spirituality that was right there, right in front of me, and if I hadn't looked up, I would have missed it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let me talk about the voice. I don't
yes,
mean
please.
A voice that speaks out loud. I think I mean that the love of God directs us. The love of God surrounds us and cares for us. And that love makes itself known to us. It discloses itself to us in ways that we can perceive. And so it might seem like a voice. It might seem like a thought. It might seem like an impulse. But that would be God in our lives.
So you get literal words?
Sometimes. Sometimes I just get a feel.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes the feeling is of this exquisite sense of peace. Sometimes, I had a wonderful time a couple of months ago. I was sitting outside in the summer. It was Sunday morning, beautiful morning. And I just opened my kimono mentally and said, okay, God, fill me, teach me, show me, fill me. And I started thinking about the infinite, what the infinite really is. And I think that God is infinite. I think that's what the Bible rather teaches us, that God is omnipotent and omnipresent and infinite. And I just thought, oh, how fabulous is that infinite? Because the infinite includes everything. There's nothing outside of the infinite. And so that means that everything is good because God is good and the infinite is good. And it was ideas, but it then lifted me into this feeling of spiritual space that's big and rich and alive with wonderful things.
So sometimes people run into an interesting conflict when they can elevate themselves into that perspective of God and be in that flow of aliveness that is love, and then almost as if, well, gee, if I'm a spiritual person, am I allowed to then still see or experience or notice or recognize or even be active about things in the world that seem not so infinite and not so connected to spiritual? I know you've done an article about thoughts on rights for women, which is clearly not staying in a God place and thinking everything is just perfect the way it is and we shouldn't mess with anything. But it's clearly taking a look at how the world is, maybe even in contrast to how that broader or more universal perspective would be.
That's a fabulous question. And the way I would approach it is to look at Jesus. Jesus was the most spiritual man who ever walked on the planet. I mean, this guy, he really knew how to do it. He just walked and he healed. He breathed and he healed. I mean, he was amazing. But he had to recognize the need. And for example, the man who had the withered hand, he was preaching in the temple and a man had a withered hand. And from the little Bible research that I've done, it was a birth thing, birth defect. And Jesus, he had to recognize there was a problem first. And then he said to the man, stand forth. And the man, can you imagine what the man must have thought? I mean, he's sitting there in the temple on the ground, I would assume, with all of these men. And Jesus was saying, stand up. Can you imagine? He's saying, who, me? Are you kidding?
Right. Right, or are you gonna tease me like everybody else has?
Yeah. And so, I mean, I can imagine him just kind of trembling and standing up. And then Jesus said, stretch forth thine hand. And he didn't say, are you kidding? Look at my hand, I can't stretch it forth. I've got a birth defect, I'm crippled. My arm doesn't work. He didn't even do that. what did he do? He stretched forth his hand. And so to me, Jesus had to know that there was something that needed to be seen correctly. It needs to be seen from God's perspective. And that act of seeing it correctly resulted in healing. And so I think as we walk around this planet and we're bombarded with things that are going on, war and violence and famine and all kinds of things, we can do something about that in terms of our own prayer. And so we have our church publishes the Christian Science Monitor, which comes out every week. And I love to read that monitor. It's a news magazine. Mm-hmm. And I love to read that monitor and take those things that look so hard and so painful and so difficult and just say, okay, God, how do you see this? What does this look like from the perspective of the divine infinite? And so I feel that I can maybe contribute a little bit towards having solutions to these problems by correcting my thought, changing my perspective.
There's a place where every now and then I get to watch pictures in my head to remind me of things. And when I was a kid, one of my favorite parts of the Christmas ceremonies around the church that I attended as a kid, Protestant church, was that Christmas Eve service, they would turn out all the lights, in this huge sanctuary, and the place would go completely black except for one candle that was lit at the front, and our minister would then light his candle from that and take it and light one candle on each side of the aisle, and then that flame would move through. All of us were holding little candles stuck through a piece of paper, you know, sort of informal. But by the time that got maybe halfway through this huge sanctuary, it was light enough to see quite well. And by the time everybody in the sanctuary was a point of light, the whole sanctuary was lit, not requiring that any one of them solve the darkness, but just that they themselves be one more point of light.
That's gorgeous. That's absolutely gorgeous. And didn't Jesus say ye are the light of the world?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just one Jesus, and look what he did. And there was one candle in your church, and look at all the light that it provided. And I don't think we should ever think that we can't do any good or that we're just one tiny little person doing our own thing in our own little corner, and it's probably not very significant. I think if each one of us could really see the godliness that we have as a gift of grace, and if we could put that to good use, and people are, look at you, look what you're doing, Scout, you are doing that. That does make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Among the things I've found online is there's actually an association of students who study with Deborah.
That's right.
Clearly, even something as simple as that, because you're certainly not glorifying yourself even as you speak. You speak from a very centered and individual place, and yet to have found that exists, you're certainly watching the same experience of being your own point of light, not necessarily banging some big drum that says you have to come follow my light, or I expect from listening to you talk today, you're not asking anybody to even follow your teachings.
No. I have the privilege of watching people find their own path. I am a teacher. I do teach metaphysical healing. And so I have an association of students, as you mentioned. And it is one of the greatest privileges to watch a student grow in grace, grow in the understanding of the power that's available to them. And, you know, we aren't the light itself. We are the candle. That I think the light is Christ. I know Jesus said, ye are the light of the world, but I think what he meant was our spiritual identity, our own individual expression of God is what that light is, and that we support that with the candle. I don't know if that makes any sense at all. But anyway, I see each student as being a unique, wonderful expression of of God's infinitude and the gift that I believe each one of us has been given gifts by the divine, by the Creator, and to watch and nourish and shelter and support each student as he or she goes forth to do his or her part in the world is just such a great privilege.
Mm-hmm. So I notice sometimes I'll see people run into a thought process that basically, to my mind, translates to there was a brief, call it science fiction or God fiction, no, not the wrong phrase, anyway, like science fiction-y, there was a brief warp, a brief moment in time, a couple thousand years ago, for about 16 years, when somebody, one really lit up guy, was able to have nifty things happen around him, but that was 2,000 years ago, and now we just sort of worship the fact that that happened. Kind of like every concert in the world, people asking for Freebird, because apparently that was a magical moment. But as if the only time it could happen and the only person around which these openings into that which is God could happen was 2,000 years ago, and it required that you be Jesus.
But God is still God.
Yeah, run with that one, Deborah.
Okay, God is God. God was God then. God is God now. I don't think God, I mean, this universal principle that runs this universe, this intelligence, is still, was then, is now, will be, because it is an eternal thing. God is eternal. God isn't here today and gone tomorrow. Yeah, I went to church on Sunday, but Monday, God isn't anymore in my life. No, God embraces this universe. And I think that, as I recall, after Jesus ascended, his disciples healed like he did for about 300 years. And then there was the Council of Nicaea, and things got all messed up because people started to vote about what true theology was, and that sort of dimmed the light and almost put it out. But the light, it's still there. It's like mathematics is there. I, believe me, can't do trigonometry, but I know the principle exists, and if I really put myself to it and studied it, I could get it. Trigonometry existed in Jesus' day. It exists now, and it will always exist. And I think that spirituality is the same thing, and that this divine principle, this divine love, is there. It just needs to be tapped into or accessed. And for me, prayer is the way to do that.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. There's sort of a place where it's easy to get to a thought that for as long as there's a universe, there's still God, and if
there
weren't
go.
God, the universe is gone too.
I like that. There you go. That's brilliant.
Can't have one without the other, as it were.
That's right.
So, Deborah, what do you watch in terms of... I'm going to rephrase that. Starting over. When people are in a one-on-one relationship, when they're partnered, when they're whether they're married, whether they're partnered, whether they're whatever, but when people are in two becoming one together as a partnership, and they run into a place, you talked about this one woman that was having a difficulty with her husband and wasn't speaking to him, but they run into a place where they're in seemingly clear conflict and disconnected and going opposite directions and freezing each other out. You've been practicing long enough between students and clients who come to you as a practitioner, you have to have seen this. What do you watch actually shifts to resolve the disputes?
Well, the first thing I can't do is decide how I think it should look. And I counsel them to not decide how they think it should look either. I think I urge people to take advantage of the situation they're in at the moment and see how much of God they can invite into their lives. See how much of spirit they can bring to it. See how much love they can find. Use it to grow. And if they grow apart, okay. I was married to a man that was not a good idea. And it didn't work, to put it mildly. It was a disaster, actually. And it was, we weren't good together. We started out, we thought we would be okay, but we weren't. And it's okay to move apart. I mean, I just think that to be alive is to see change, and if we can just trust that change is going to be progressive, we don't have to see what it's going to look like. We don't have to decide what it's going to look like. And I think one of the things that I had to let go of was I had this fantasy about what a marriage should look like, what my marriage should look like. And this is going to sound really stupid, but I thought, okay, we're going to have candlelit dinners every night with the good silver and the china and the crystal. And then all of a sudden it occurred to me, right, who's going to cook the meal? Who's going to do the dishes? I mean, it's a very simple thing, but it was a wake-up call to me that we come into our relationship sometimes with a script of what it's going to look like, and we have to throw that script away, and we have to trust that what we're forging together as a partnership is going to have a life of its own. It's going to be its own, it's going to go its own direction. And I remember when I got married again, to the man I was married to for 34 years, one of the things we agreed upon when we got married, he was also a Christian Science practitioner. He has passed away now. But one of the things we agreed to is that we were going to give the other person room to grow in our thinking about them. We're not going to hold them bound to what we thought they should do or think they should do or do it, be what we thought they should be or look like or pursue. And it was the most wonderful kind of springboard for growth, because he didn't hold me to what he thought I should do, and I didn't do that for him. And so what that enriched our marriage.
I was at a wedding and heard what I thought was one of the most beautiful parts of a wedding vow that I'd ever heard. And the couple in their vows each said to each other, I promise to treat as important those things that you think are important, even if they wouldn't be important to me.
That's the deal. That's called love.
Mm-hmm.
And love is caring more about the other guy than you do yourself. Mm-hmm. And I know that one of the reasons I had to get married again was because I didn't really know how to love. I didn't see it in my growing up years. And so I learned it through this marriage that was really helpful. It was tough at times. It was challenging. There was a moment when we weren't sure it was even going to work. But we both prayed, and we both supported the other person. And, you know, love is all about the divine in our lives, and it has a way of expressing itself if we'll just let it happen.
So I have a phrase I use a lot that I say that the definition of love is the experience we have when our aliveness or our energy is flowing in us.
Good.
So if we look at love as a divine thing, Deborah, and we're gonna wind down. So you've got like 3 or 4 minutes here to explain this to the entire world. this past season has been a huge energetic and spiritual push, both causing people to do a significant amount of review of themselves and their circumstances, but also causing people to do a perhaps larger than before review of. Where they stand in life. So for a number of people, it may have triggered deep sense of themselves not good enough or a deep sense of alone and separate. How would you speak to people who are finding themselves separated within themselves or feeling as if they're separated from love of society or others?
Well, for me, love is a fact. It exists. It's like the air we breathe. And to open ourselves up to that, to first of all have hope that there is love for us, that love is a universal thing. It's not confined only to persons or to circumstances. And that's a big difference, I think. And that love is, because love is universal, it's there for everybody. That was one of the first things that grabbed my attention when I started reading Science and Health. The author, Mrs. Eddy, says something like, love is universal and impartial in its adaptations and bestowals. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, if that were true, how amazing would that be?
Deborah, could you say that phrase again? Love is
impartial and universal in its adaptations and bestowals.
Adaptations and bestowals.
Right.
I like that.
Isn't that gorgeous? That really spoke, that was the first sentence that really spoke to my heart as I read that book. And that's the basis of love. It is universal. It is there for everyone. We may not feel it. Our lives might look grim sometimes, but that love is there. And if we just open our hearts to to the possibility of it being there, we will find it.
Wow. Deborah, this has just been an absolute delight for me. I want to let everybody know that our guest today is Deborah Hipps. It's spelled H-U-E-B-S-C-H. So you can find more of what she's talked about and a lot of what she's published. Deborah, H-U-E-B-S-C-H, Hipps. And I want to let you know that the First Church of Christian Science Mill Valley invites you to join them and explore these thoughts further, or to explore them in any Christian Science reading room. This is Scout Bartlett. This has been a special edition of the program Spiritual Perspectives, coming to you from our flagship station, KEST 1450 AM in San Francisco, and also simulcast and archived on www.ifideknownthen.com. So this is Spiritual Perspectives, and I always like to ask two favors. Number one, please treat yourself as you would treat a loved one, because you truly are. And no matter where on earth you are, it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose.